Hi, my name's Rhiannon and I'm the CEO and first-time founder of Travel Talk. I took an idea for a mobile application and content platform from a piece of paper in a bedroom to a company that's now valued at $2.5 million and a React Native application that is used by travellers in over 50 countries around the world. Female Disruptor is where we shine a light on female leadership and development in the technology sector. By sharing these stories, we hope to inspire other women looking to get into tech-related roles and provide a supportive network where you can come for advice and also learn more about coding in React Native. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of Female Disruptor. I'm joined today by Deborah McGargle from Seed Legals. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here.
Cool. So maybe you can start by telling everyone a little bit about Seed Legals and who they are. You're their chief legal officer, is that correct?
I am. I'm the chief legal officer at Seed Legals. So Seed Legals is a fundraising platform which allows users to complete their funding rounds online, gives users access to great employment documents and option documents, and helps users manage their cap table. So anybody who's looking to raise funding can come on board. We've got an expert team that takes them through the process, and it cuts out all of the traditional legal pains that founders have often felt when they've been raising early stage funding.
I can confirm that you indeed do that, because as a startup that was early stage and went through Seed, in fact, I do wish that I had you Seed Legals a little bit earlier on. We've just completed our EMI scheme with you guys and it was phenomenally helpful. I also loved that you kind of spoke to me like someone who needed, you know, to get some different information than what you might typically get as a experienced sort of business person. So I loved how you kind of guided people through the platform.
Yeah. Oh, no, thanks. That's really good to hear. It's been an interesting challenge for me, because I did this job. This was my day job in the old world before Seed Legals. So I actually did this job. The story is actually quite interesting about how I came to the decision to join Seed Legals, which I'll share with you actually. The decision that was on the table when Anthony Rose approached me was, do you want to come and help build this robot that effectively removes lawyers from the fundraising process?
And controversial.
Controversial, completely. And I said, could I go away and think about this over the Christmas break? So we always go on a holiday over Christmas. So I went over the Christmas break and my husband said to me, Deborah, either you are going to put yourself out of a job or Anthony's going to hire somebody else to put you out of a job. Which way do you want to go? So I came back and rang Anthony and said, oh, yes, I think I'll do this. It looks really interesting. But, you know, that was the conundrum that I actually faced.
When was this again? What year now?
So this was end of 2016.
Wow. And what a ride you must have been on in the last 2 years. Just maybe describe how far Seed Legals came since that moment.
Yeah. So we started off as a really small founding team in a cupboard on the South Bank, and we had a great CTO, obviously Anthony Rose, great CEO, great visionary and leader, Noel, who was our marketing officer, and we have done 2 funding rounds. We did our first funding round in 2017, which was just over $1 million, and then we have just closed our second funding round earlier this year, of course, on the platform, and that was for $4 million.
Congratulations. That was with Index, was it?
That was with Index Ventures and La Family and Kima Ventures as well as some really supportive angels. So yeah, so we did that earlier this year. We've gone from 5 all the way up to 30 plus, which
wow,
is interesting, isn't it?
Very trying fast to scaling that quickly,
sure,
right?
And trying to navigate that growth. Sometimes we're a little bit uncomfortable, but it's good to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You have to rethink, reshape daily even.
Yeah. So it was the right decision for you then back in 2016?
Yeah, it was. It was completely the right decision. And also, without sounding too kind of sort of happy clappy, I am a real firm believer that you're meant to be where you're meant to be at any given place in time. And actually, when I look back over my whole career, the things that made absolutely no sense whatsoever now have really kind of crystallized and come together, even just in terms of managing teams, in terms of flexibility and not being so precious about product, about what's been released, you know, trying to be a little bit more relaxed in myself. Some wonderful, wonderful experience. I'm very lucky. We say all the time, how lucky are we? Because that really is genuinely how we feel.
Again, I can connect with you. I feel phenomenal personally lucky to get up every day in a job that I truly love. You know, to have the privilege of building out a company and a vision that you have and then finding people to back that vision, you know, as much as we can complain or say, hey, it's a struggle, sometimes you have to work your ass off. You know, I'm grateful every day that I had the opportunity. But one of the things you just mentioned that I find interesting, you sort of said you look back over life and think, oh, well, actually, you know, I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to learn that piece of information. And I, you know, I sit here from the side of the fence where I came through my own career experience after sort of 10, 15 years as you have. And we kind of sit there entering a business with maybe a bit more experience than the person starting out at the age of 22 and, or, you know, below that. And we kind of hear on a podcast to talk about what it's like to be a female in technology in 2019, but you've been in technology for a while now. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the early part of my career, I was general counsel for the Siemens Group. So it was quasi technology, but predominantly engineering, manufacturing, stuff that really girls weren't supposed to get involved with. But I loved it. I loved the factories, the orders. I just loved the honesty of that old fashioned engineering and creativity and technology at that very early stage.
And it's unforgiving. It's that just in time management, right? So with manufacturing, if you muck up, that's a lot of money down the drain,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The real creative genius, you know, we were dealing with switch gears. Yes, I know, a bit boring engineering for electricity, but actually they weren't, you know, they were design, precision, beautiful, meant to withstand. And so my career started there in a wonderful, I had a wonderful experience, traveled around the Middle East, did an awful lot of international deals, was invited very, very early on. They were a hugely early stage adopter of diversity. So I was on the board at 26, at the age of 26. I had children. They had brought in childcare for my children, which was fantastic, unheard of really at that time. But I'd heard of these tech startups. You know, I'd kind of had my finger on the pulse and running alongside this very linear career, this very LinkedIn career that you would see if you looked at my profile. I had been an entrepreneur from being 18. I had a classic car garage when I was 18. I've owned pubs, clubs.
It's always inside of you, isn't it?
Always inside.
When you look back.
Always inside.
Yeah.
And so it all, it always kind of been there. And then, you know, you see these technologists, these entrepreneurs coming through, not just creating something, not just innovation for innovation's sake, actually
solving a problem,
changing the market, being the fixer. And that's who I am, you know. And you say, people say, look for your tribe. I'm a fixer.
Yeah, you can't leave something undone. I mean, that for me, sometimes I do go too hard on efficiency and remember that there are feelings. It's a constant balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
To sort of produce something of excellence and quality, sort of as you mentioned in the manufacturing world, but also understand how to, you know, maintain that balance when dealing with human emotions going through a startup, right?
Sure. So all of that experience about how to create, how to lead, which actually I should have stayed in. So my parents thought, because it was a job for life with a marvelous salary and a final salary pension, I suddenly decided, having had a glimpse of the startup world, that I was just going to jump. And jump I did. I went to see my CEO one day and said, I'm out. And he said, where to? And I said, I've absolutely no idea. And around about that time, so this is about the time that Twitter was born, you know, sort of 2006, 2007. I was doing a few kind of consultancy gigs for people, legal consultancy. But there was a new project that came to the UK called the Difference Engine. And it was started by John Bradford in Middlesbrough in the Northeast. And all of these really cool people were going in there doing really wild things and not making any money and getting investment. And I just knew, I just was passionate about it. And I was really fortunate to team up with another lawyer called MJ Rippon, who was also super passionate about this new technology world that was coming through. And so we pitched it to lots of law firms and said, we're lawyers and this new world is coming and it's the long game. We're not going to get any fees out of these people, but we're going to bring them in and we're going to support and nurture them. And the law firm said, you are absolutely crazy. Not on my watch,
you know. I bet it fell flat because, you know, and with all due respect, because I've been through all sorts of legal experiences, I think there are times when you absolutely do need a law firm for certain things. But I think, you know, the disruption of an industry that is very traditional, very old-fashioned and very geared towards, let's face it, a white male leader. I've actually found a struggle with dealing with law firms because as a founder, you know, their client is the company, right? So they're going to represent what's best for the company. it's not always the case that what's best for the company is best for the founder. And you can appreciate why shareholders might want to, you know, that way. But of course, a founder is a different thing to someone just stepping into a CEO role of an established company, right?
Yeah, completely. It's a whole different skill set that's needed to take the founder to a place of trust. Of real trust. They don't know what they don't know. So you could give them any advice and they would just take it. But what I think people don't realise is that very early stage advice, which often we find junior associates giving to startups because there's no money to build them, that advice is the most critical advice that startup will ever get.
Yeah.
And if they get it wrong, if it's the wrong advice from the word go, they might find themselves like we have currently with a couple of teams who've literally just hit that growth curve, who've signed some significant contracts, whose cap tables were so badly damaged in the early days that we can't get funding for them. So it's a different type of lawyer. It's a different type. In fact, I would even go as far as to say it's not actually legal advice that's needed. It's commercial advice. It's about understanding the journey. What does it look like on paper?
Yeah.
What does it look like for them towards the end? What does it look like to them as people?
Yeah, well,
and what
why
will it do to them
do
internally?
In the first yeah. place as well? Because, you know, when I had an idea from a bedroom and found someone to back, you know, a PowerPoint presentation, when we talked about our split, which began at 30 for him, 70 for me, you know, that felt like all the work was done. And I never even actually could fathom a moment where suddenly my shares were being sold for money, right?
Yeah.
Which they now are. And we've had a share price of £2.50 for quite a while now, looking for a hike very soon. But, you know, suddenly, 2 years later, after building an entire company, hours and hours are spent talking about this corporate side of law that I didn't even realize was important.
Yeah. And there is some great law firms, some great startup lawyers. When myself and MJ started, there was nobody, there was us. And there was a whole industry just shaking their heads at us. Like we were completely crazy. And you know what? We knew we were crazy. But the teams we've had through, the real privilege of absolute excellence of the street fighters and the hustlers and the dreamers that we got to meet before anybody else saw them.
Yeah.
And now we see their name up in lights and we've passed them over to different law firms. And we've seen the exits. And we played a very small, very unwritten in history part, but we played a part nonetheless.
Well,
and I think that's wonderful.
I think it's unwritten because, you know, you say that people thought you were crazy. And by the way, I'm finding that that's a common theme. Like, if people don't think you're crazy, you're probably not going to be an entrepreneur. You know, you are rewriting history because law is based on precedent and, you know, a lot of templates and boilerplate. So it's really ripe for a technology automated system, right? If we know that we're plugging in the same details time and time again, and really that all that's changing is the address or the name or the length of employment, why on earth have we not had a Seed Legals platform before? Why would we constantly charge people over and over these high fees to do something that's already been done?
That's exactly right. You know, we all just utilise in the same wireframe. All that we're doing is just selecting a different variable from a number of key material variables. So whether you're raising £10,000 or whether you're raising £100 million, you're just choosing certain key material points. The wireframe never changes. It's just that you need to be able to build a system like we have, an intelligent system, so that it can mesh together all of the different combinations of variables chosen and the deliverable on the output isn't a template formula. It's something that's been shaped and creative and it's fit for purpose.
Yeah. So the human interaction is obviously determining the fields that you're inputting to some degree. But the idea of automation, you've really replaced about 10 different lawyers' jobs there.
Sure.
Right.
I would go as far as to say more than that in terms of experience, because, you know, we're utilizing real time data.
Mm-hmm.
And I often find with founders, as a lawyer, you could say, well, you should do this. As an investor, you could say you could do this. But ultimately, with our startup founders, they want peer-to-peer advice. They want to know that other people doing a similar thing at a similar time have chosen that. That seems to be the go-to benchmark for them. What did somebody else do raising $250,000? What kind of valuation did they have if they were in a similar space to us? And that brings real comfort to the founder. And of course, we've got that real-time, live, honest data. Not, you know, it's not stats that we get through a government paper. It's on our platform, we can see it change on a day-to-day basis.
Embolden Her is an organization striving to support women working in tech to empower them to become leaders in tech. To find out more, go to emboldenher.org.
and you see each startup come through and go on that cycle. Like you said, you've watched them go from a young stage through it and you see their pain points. You learn each step along the way. We were just speaking before the show about how much benefit you feel you get from being on the front line, talking to customers and understanding any pain points, which I understand you must obviously circle back into the product. And then, you know, if someone like myself comes on for the first time, you've already eradicated the problems that other people have faced time and time again, I'd assume.
Yeah. And we see that often with lawyer feedback on the documents where there's been a lawyer representing on the other side. And so lawyers will put forward a change because they think it just could be changed. And, you know, we're saying we've tested this. It's been checked by thousands of lawyers, not by one or two, you know, deal after deal after deal. And we're all trying to get, particularly at early stage fundraising, a globalized approach. It shouldn't be this difficult. It shouldn't be this silly, is it 12 months or 18 months? What does it matter? If you're making a true statement, it really doesn't matter.
It should be objective. I mean, I think I have an issue with the fact of whether startups are true meritocracy, and this is going to allow me maybe to edge into what it's like to be a female founder and an entrepreneur. I mean, I will sit here and say, look, the majority of funding is handed out by, let's say, you know, rather wealthy white males who tend to invest in people like them. Now, I'm not going to say that that's because they're completely narrow-minded. I just think that, you know, I like to see myself in other people. That's a sort of a quality that you kind of go, oh, she reminds me of myself when I'm younger. And I could see myself, you know, if I was in a position to invest in others, try to, you know, invest towards people that I felt like I could identify with. So I don't think that, you know, by me saying that white men invest in other white men, I'm correct there. I just think that we need to do a bigger job of obviously reminding them that stepping out of their comfort zone could be sort of interesting as well.
Yeah, no, I think you are right. I think part of the problem as to why female founders are less likely to get investments, we've all seen the data points. They're not true data points because nobody was bothered to really record them. So we have these crazy data points of only 8%, I think, or whatever it is this year, of venture capital goes towards females. That even teams who've got a female as part of the founding team are significantly disadvantaged just by like a woman on that early journey. And that's actually only with regards to white women, because nobody chose to even map women from other backgrounds. Yeah. Nobody even thought that was important. It's absolutely disgraceful. And even still, you know, women of colour completely underrepresented in venture funding. I could go on about that for ages, but I won't. But the point being is that there really hasn't been a change. There has been absolutely no change that I can see. I've been banging the drum for gender equality in particular. I know diversity and equality across is really important, but for gender equality, that's where I am a supporter of female founders. I've been banging this drum for almost 20 years. And we look, I've sat on various diversity panels and, you know, we think, well, what's changed? Where did we improve? And we see some pacifying statements. We see some extra data points, but I am yet to fully feel a shift in that direction.
I'm glad that you can say that, because I feel the same way. And this is certainly not us sitting here saying that we hate the opposite sex. I think, you know, it's positive when I've spoken to maybe younger people on this show that have just entered their career, that they're feeling supported, that there are initiatives in their work to help. And it sounds like at least in Siemens, you were seeing some of them. Mm. But I think, you know, it's one thing to create initiatives, it's another thing to see shift in the way that we're received and therefore listen to. And I think actually, I'm going to say this very firmly, my main problem that I believe I face is that I'm just not listened to. There's a complete dismissal of the idea that I could even have, you know, the ability to do what I'm saying, right? So therefore, I never get invited in for a second conversation.
Yeah, it is very true. I'll give you an example of something that happened to me recently. So I am I sit as a chair and an NED on behalf of some investors where they're just trying to get boards organised. And I went for a board interview for a big technology company. And the person interviewing me from the board, who was also an investor themselves, tried to ask me to imagine the technology as if I were taking up the hem on my skirt.
Oh,
and that truly happened. I was furious. I answered the question. I don't know why. I think I was so shocked that it could still be spoken about and that was at a board, a very high level capacity by an investor representative. And I answered the question. I just wasn't quick enough at the time to say, you know, I don't know what I would have said, but yeah.
I mean,
that happened.
That's ridiculous. And that comes off the back of another story I heard last week about someone who was really into gaming, and they were into gaming very early years. And so they'd be on chat rooms, and apparently if you had a girl's name online, the guys would come on and the first thing they'd say to you is, hey, go make me a sandwich. So she said she made up the kitchen club, and they made it as a joke, like You could join the kitchen club and they'd invite the boys in and say, hey, do you want me to make you a sandwich? Because that's all they got. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, there's sexual harassment. There's just total stupidity. Yeah. The assumption that a female's job is better on biz dev side. And actually, I have this issue where my skills, you know, I love business development, especially when it's a business that I've created, but my skills are technical, you know, they go a lot deeper than just being able to talk.
Yeah.
And so many times in the past, and one of the reasons I actually wanted to start my own company is that I'd go there and I'd be like, right, I want to do, you know, the high level specific, you know, specialized skill job or the creative job. And, you know, in the end, someone's like, yeah, but why don't you do biz dev? You'd be great on biz dev. And actually, there's a lot of hard work to do on biz dev because you have to talk intelligently about the technology in order to sell it in. But then suddenly all the cool stuff, the actual development, the work goes to the boys. And I was like, well, hold on. I'm not just like, you know, loading in your leads and then you don't let me touch the actual interesting bit.
Yeah. There's so many examples. So many examples, you know, I see from female founders. I have a Slack group predominantly in the north with a colleague of mine who is a techie, Joe. And together we have a group for female founders who've had experiences like this. Why? Because we can't ordinarily talk about it in our normal workplace. We've had some funny stories, you know, for example, a hem on the skirt. We've had some cruel and horrific stories where we've had to help female founders through, because to even voice those in a venture-backed world would effectively disqualify them from even being able to go on to raise moving forward. So
I have a few stories, quite frankly, that I can't tell.
Yeah.
Because if I tell them, it will negatively impact how I'm seen. So I'm not going to tell them on my podcast, and I will not probably ever be able to tell them, but I want the record to show that there are a lot of those stories that I can't tell because it will disadvantage my position, because another man would say, I don't want to invest in her if that's what she's going to say about another man.
Yeah. It's sad. It's sad because ultimately, you know, the data shows us that female-backed businesses, females in a boardroom, add measurably to the success of a business. It puts noughts on the ends of investment, truly, when you get to that level in revenue. And it's such a positive thing. I can't believe, you know, that we even still have to have the conversation about it. I cannot believe we have to do that.
I love that we're just still in disbelief, and it is a shame, but I think people like us and obviously all the other great female founders out there, the women that are coming into technology, I believe there'll be a shift. We'll see the net impact in sort of 10 years' time, but for now it's still tough. And, you know, it's so nice to find other people to identify with, because I am determined to change these beliefs and also call them out, but not in an uncomfortable way to point the finger, but to really say, hey, it is about time, and I think the technology industry is due a time's up moment. It's not about sexual harassment. It's about meritocracy and being respected for intelligence, and the idea that a female can come to the table and be able to do something that a man does and potentially do it just as well or, God forbid, even better.
Yeah. We raise the profile and we change the way it works by helping each other to be more successful than any other male-led startup, and by supporting each other and shouting about each other, because we never shout for ourselves and our own successes. So we all need that advocate to be there that's going to shout on our behalf. And that's how we do it. We shout about how great they are and what great work they're doing in supporting them.
Yeah, and that is it, isn't it? Because it's not fair that we have to constantly talk about ourselves. That's not what we want to do, but we do have to shout louder to be heard in the first place. But I will say, and I'm sure you feel this too, if we were male, and I say, you know, if I was a boy, Beyonce sung that song, but I think I would have been recognized for the fact that I brought, you know, my own technology platform to the table. I've built a mobile app from scratch. I've gone through Ionic to React Native. I lead the entire tech team. I've led every single part of this business, and I know it inside out. And I do feel that if I was male, someone would have sort of noticed that by now and gone, holy shit, that's quite impressive. It's hard to do that, right? But I think the time is coming. And if I do get that opportunity myself to show that, you know, it's for others, you know, so that no other woman has to go this far to be like, hey, I'm technical.
Yeah. And what I like about being at Seed Legals is if you look around our team, it's equally balanced. It's as diverse. And that hasn't been something that we've deliberately set out to do. We've just attracted the right people, incredible candidates. But I'm really proud when I look around our office that we have people who speak all different languages from all different backgrounds. What a wealth of stories we've got in there, all different genders. It really is wonderful. And I think, you know, Anthony would say the same. A lot of the way we've built the team in such a diverse way goes towards the success that we've had to date.
Well, they're lucky to have, you know, someone like you. And I think culture starts from the top down in a startup for sure. And if you believe in diversity and meritocracy and equality, then you're going to feed that into the new hires. And it's these startups like Seed Legals that I believe will change the way of the future because we're thinking about that. And that in turn 10 years later means there's just never really a question that a woman couldn't do what a man does.
Exactly.
Right?
Hopefully these conversations won't be happening at that time.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation today. Thanks for joining Female Disruptor. And for any startups out there that are beginning their journey or even, you know, a little way through it, check out Seed Legals. It's a great platform for all your legal needs, really, up until Series A, I would say.
Well, and beyond.
And beyond, yeah. It's seedlegals.com, right?
Yes, yeah.
Cool. So thanks for joining us, everyone. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'll catch you next week.